Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 8th of July on Adomini 2017, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Brian Meehan.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues, here comes the news. Let me welcome Brian.
Hi there, thanks.
How are you?
I'm glad to be back with you guys.
We're happy to have you. As you can hear, Steve Ray is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest, so we will not be on YouTube today, but you can still hear us live. You can hear us on the Jazz 90.1 app. You can hear us on the live stream. You can hear us all the heck over the place.
It's a good thing. I've always been told I have a face for radio.
Yes, you do. As do we all. All right. So our news today. Stream ripping is now the fastest growing form of music piracy. Several sites and apps allow users to turn Spotify songs, YouTube videos, and other streaming content into permanent files to store on phones and computers. Record labels claim that tens or even hundreds of millions of tracks are illegally copied and distributed by stream ripping services each month. One service alone is thought to have more than 60 million monthly users. According to research, 15% of adults regularly use these services, with 33% of them coming from the 16 to 24 age bracket. Overall use of stream ripping sites increased by 141.3% by between 2014 and 2016, overshadowing all other illegal music services. In September last year, these sites were used 498,000 times to pirate music. That's about 500,000 times. By comparison, file sharing service BitTorrent was only used 23,000 times. Cyberlocker sites like Dropbox and RapidShare were accessed only about 105,000 times. Reasons given for music stream ripping include music was already owned by the user in another format, wanting to listen to music offline, wanting to listen to music on the move, cannot afford to pay for music, feeling that official music content is overpriced. A quarter of the people who use stream ripping believe the sites had the necessary rights and permissions to allow them to download and rip the content, or at least said they did. One in five said they felt they were not doing anything illegal. Only 56% of consumers said they felt confident in identifying illegal content online. There was some good news for the music industry, however. It found that the average consumer spent about $100 on music last year, up from about $85 in 2016. So our poll of the week, it's soundbites.org. That is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is how do you get your music? And your choices are, I buy it all legally, I rip other people's CDs, I rip streams like Spotify or Google Music, I tape it off the radio, knowing some of you. So far, we've got 18 votes, and I buy it all legally is being lied to by 78% of you. We know you'll have more to say about that, so if you slide down there on the right, scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, the very first link is to the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the first poll discussion is 8 July 17, how do you get your music? And you can join us there. And, of course, you can join us online at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. I teach various courses, and one of the things that I teach about is ethics. Mm-hmm. And so I ask my students all the time, do you consider yourself ethical? They all raise their hands, all of them, yeah, invariably. And I'll say, how many of you have music you've obtained illegally?
Hands go
Everybody's
down.
Hands go down. I said, come on, I'm not the police. Be honest. Mm-hmm. Have the guts to be honest here in this class.
I'm betting over half the class.
Over half the class will raise their hands again. And I will then say to them, why do you think that? Why do you do that? And the answers are the same. I can't afford it. They make too much money. They're not going to miss my money. Blah, 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 blah.
Looking for some sort of sense of justification.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. They're looking for to justify it in some way. So I will then ask my class. So I've had kids argue with me. I mean, actually argue with me.
Oh, really?
Oh, vehemently argue with me. And then I'll say, okay, anybody in this class...
What, yeah, I was going to say, what's their backing behind their arguing?
That mostly that they're not taking money away from anybody. It all goes to the big fat cat record companies, and the artists don't get much of anything, and blah, 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 blah.
I've got another argument to add, though, to that. When the companies that are providing the content make it so difficult to get to it,
yep.
For example, you're watching an app, an episode of a television show you like, but you can't view it on an iPad. You can only view it on a computer.
Right.
You know, they have all these really arcane rules for which device and which screen size and which resolution you can watch it at. That's something the end user not only doesn't care about, it frustrates the end user.
No, and I get that. That doesn't stop it from being illegal.
No, certainly doesn't.
So I will then say, is anybody in this class a musician? And we'll always get one or two who raise their hands. And I'll say, and I know most of my students. So I had one kid in my class who had, you know, a three-year-old son. So I said to the guy who was arguing with me, I said, you need to look this guy in the eye and say it's okay to take money out of his kid's mouth because you don't want to pay for your music. Dead silence. He said, well, it's not like that. I said, it is exactly like that. It is exactly like that. And then they have no answer. You know, when you make it real, when you make it personal, when you put a face to the one you're stealing from, stealing suddenly takes on a whole new thing. So, no, I get that. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Don. Our first caller, actually, is Don from Greece, New York. What's up, Don?
Hi, guys. Yeah, I've been getting a Zeus Trojan horse or virus notice. It started about a week ago, and I restarted my computer a few times. It doesn't help. It's every time I go to open my browser, I get that. And then, lo and behold, a week later, the warning went away, and I was able to get into my browser again.
Thing of it is, though, now, what are you running for anti-spyware or malware?
I'm running, for anti-spyware and malware, nothing.
Yes, that's your problem. Your problem. You got to go to our website and download Super Anti-Spyware and Malware Bytes. And I can guarantee you, if you run those two, you're going to find...
A lot of stuff.
Yeah, on the average lately that I've been seeing on a lot of the machines, it's about 3,000 to 6,000 pieces of spyware and spam that Super Anti-Spyware will find alone and cleaned out. And it's got that Zeus in there, along with malware bytes that'll find maybe another anywhere from 500 to 1,000.
Okay. Okay.
Download those two and run them.
What you can do is go to securitytango.com.
Okay.
And click on the Let's Dance button. There's a section for Windows and Mac and everybody else. Go to your page, print out that page, and follow it along step by step.
Okay.
And that will clean. The first time you do it, it's tedious. Takes a while because you got to do all those steps. But once you've done that, now your machine should be clean. And then, as Dave said, if you run a good antivirus program, because although there aren't a lot of new viruses out there, there are a lot of old ones still circulating.
Still hanging around, yep.
So you want a good antivirus program, you want malware bytes, and you want super anti-spyware. And those three on your machine will keep you pretty clean.
Okay, and that place to go to follow the instructions, where was that?
SecurityTango.com.
Okay. So you're suggesting running the whole Security Tango?
Yeah. For the first time?
Yeah.
Since you have nothing on your machine? Yes, absolutely. Okay. Take it all afternoon tomorrow and do it.
Yeah, that's going to take a long time.
Yes, it is, but because you have nothing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right, so definitely do it.
Okie dokie, guys.
Okie dokie.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Keep smiling, Don.
Okay, will do. Bye.
Yeah, it's... the first time you clean out your machine, that's what it takes.
You have to start from this known good, you know, before you can start putting on any sort of things that are going to protect you.
Right, right.
Stop the bleeding before you put a Band-Aid on.
That's exactly right. We have no other way to protect your machine. It's got to be clean before you put the antivirus and anti-malware stuff on. That first time you do it, you know, if you buy a brand new machine, first thing you should do is put a good virus protection program, a good anti-malware program like Malwarebytes, and a good anti-spyware program like Super Anti-Spyware on your machine.
The other program I recommend, Revo.
Right, Revo One Installer. Though that's for a brand new machine, but when you're like Don, who's already got a machine that is likely very infected, mm-hmm. you need to dance the whole security tango.
Yep. Yeah, definitely.
All right. You had something you wanted to ask?
No.
All right. On to the next caller, our friend Carl, all the way from Pottstown, PA. Hiya, Carl. What's up?
Gentlemen, how are you today?
Peachy, you?
Oh, pretty good. I have a question about long web pages, ones that scroll way down, like a lot of the Facebook pages, for example. I noticed that in most web browsers, or all of them, I guess, that I've tried so far, if I pull the scroll bar all the way down to scroll to the very bottom of the page,
yep.
the scroll bar jumps back up again.
Yep.
And I pull it down some more to yep. the bottom, but it jumps back up again. And I have to keep doing this over and over again, and sometimes I get to the bottom of the page, and sometimes it just never gets there. Is there an adjustment or a thing, any way that I could set it so that more of the page loads so yeah. that doesn't happen as often?
That's an example of a continuously loading web page. So you will never get to the bottom of that one on Facebook, for example. It's just going to continue feeding you content because they want you to stay on their site.
Right. It's basically an endless scroller.
Okay. I was wondering then, does the website determine how much you get at a time, or is that an adjustment in your web browser that you can change?
No, you can't change it. It's up to them.
Okay. Okay, I'm just wondering about that. That answers my question. Thank you very much.
Well, there you go.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, we see it on a lot of these things. The big thing is on something like Facebook. It's essentially an endless scroll. You can keep hitting the down arrow and keep hitting the down arrow and keep hitting the down arrow. And, of course, the basic idea is they want you to stay on that site. And so the more content they can give you, the longer you will stay. But the problem is if they give you all of that content at once, it could take half an hour to load that page. So they give you a piece of it, and then when you hit the bottom of that, they give you another piece. And you hit the bottom, they give you another piece. And it's all designed to give you a fairly quick experience, but also addictive, I guess is the right word, experience. You need to find the patience within yourself to deal with that. There's not much else I can say about that. They're all doing it now. A lot of news websites are doing it. A lot of other social media sites are doing it. Twitter does it. Google Plus does it. Certainly Facebook does it. They all have that. Most places like Instagram and what's the other one? Blogspot does it by pages, but what's the other one? Can't think of it. Anyway, the point is they all pretty much do the same thing. They either break it up into pages, which is the old way to do it, or there's some JavaScript that makes the new pages endlessly scroll. It's a very addictive is the right word. It's a very addictive way to do things. Every time it's like you're a gerbil in a cage. Every time you hit that down arrow, you get more content. Hit that down arrow, you get more content. Hit that down arrow, you get more content. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Brian Meehan, and me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on the truly great and truly grateful to be member supported Jazz 90.1.
On
online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Brian Meehan.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are soundbites. And if I could get my fingers to work. There we go. As you know, we were hit, we being the world, were hit by a ransomware program called Petya, P-E-T-Y-A, Petya. And then there was another version that they thought was Petya, but was they named it not Petya because it wasn't. And what it did was it encrypted people's files. But the problem was people couldn't get the decryption. If you paid money, you got the decryption key. But people couldn't pay money because they blocked the website, they blocked the email address that you would send money to. So the guy, woman, people who were putting out Petya didn't get a lot of money. And the problem is, though, that all the people who got hit couldn't get their data decrypted.
And that's... And there's no recourse from that on your computer directly.
Right, right. Well, the recourse is, of course, to actually have
a backup.
Yeah. But at any rate, a security firm says it has managed to decrypt files damaged by the recent Petya ransomware attack on one infected computer, which is a start. The cyber attack caused havoc for businesses around the globe. The potential solution only works if the ransomware secured administration privileges on the machine. However, the company, Positive Technology, said the concept is currently too technical for most average computers to run anyway. The company said in a blog that the creators of the ransomware have made mistakes in programming the encryption algorithm that was used with administrative rights. So they used apparently two different encryption algorithms, one if they gained administrative access and one if they didn't.
That makes sense.
And the one that they programmed with encryption had mistakes in it. So the completeness of data recovery depends on a lot of factors. Disk size, free space, fragmentation may be able to reach 100% for large disks that contain many standard files, such as the operating system and application components that are identical on many machines and have known values. It's impossible to work out how many victims would have had their administration privileges taken over. Without this, the ransomware carries out a different method of encryption, which is only reversible with a private key obtainable from the criminals behind it. However, the email address that was provided was initially shut down, meaning they were not contactable by victims who chose to try to pay. The research team's findings only work on the recent Petya ransomware and its variants. It doesn't look like a working solution yet for everybody, but it does give cause for hope. So how are your backups looking? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Just like Andy did from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
What's up?
This is Saturday. It must be Sunday, right?
You got it.
Got the Firefox browser running on my wife's HP Envy laptop. She's complaining because when she goes to read the newspaper, the screen will go black.
Now, the screen what?
The screen goes black.
The whole screen or just what's presented by Firefox?
Well, that was just it. She kept telling me that. I kept thinking the thing was shutting itself down. I was here the other day when it went. It's the content part of the browser. The toolbar is still there and works. So she shuts the browser down, goes back in, restarts the browser, brings her right back to the page she was just on, and she goes on from there.
So it's just the first time of the browser starting?
No, it happens intermittently after the browser's been up and running for a while. And it will do it on various websites, but she sees it the most on the DNC website because that's where she spends a fairly good amount of time reading the paper every day.
I wonder if there's maybe some websites like the DNC use a paywall that pops up a dialog box in front of the web page to encourage you to pay for their stories. And I wonder if there's maybe a pop-up blocker in place that's preventing that from appearing, which in turn is preventing the rest of the page from showing. Are you familiar with the extensions that you can add to Firefox?
To some level. I don't add a lot of them, but I know they're there.
Okay. Right.
They look like little puzzle pieces in the menus and the preferences.
Right. So yeah. If you go to into Firefox, the menu in the upper right, the three little dots.
Right.
If you pull that down, and I think you go to extensions, or you see you should see add-ons.
Okay.
Brian is should see add-ons. One of those, and you look at those add-ons, you may see a list of one of them might be an ad blocker of some sort. Try turning that off. And see if that works. The other thing is, how much stuff does your wife have running in the background on that machine? It may be that it's just too full and that it's trying to swap stuff out, and she gets impatient and then you know.
Well, okay, impatience is operating premise number one with this operator, but it's an i7 with 12 gigabytes of RAM and a 1 terabyte hard drive.
That's pretty beefy.
Yeah, it shouldn't be a problem.
If it were an older laptop, I'd agree it's probably loading down, but this sucker doesn't load down.
Right. So in that case, I'd have to say that Brian is probably right. It's a pop-up blocker. The other thing to do is to try it in a different browser. Chrome or even, God forbid, Edge.
So far, have met with all kinds of dirty looks.
Well, I'm not saying do it
not permanently,
but do it as a test.
Yeah,
I
know.
If in fact it works in those browsers, then the problem is in Firefox, and it is most likely an add-on.
Yeah, the thought I had was if it wasn't tied in, possibly with the anti-exploit problem I was having with Malwarebytes last week.
That's certainly a possibility.
I thought I had fixed that, and she told me that because I didn't see it when I tested it last week. But then she said, "I said, is that before I knew I was going to call you guys today about this? I said, there's the little white box with the Malwarebytes anti exploit still popping up." She says, "Yes." Oh darn! I didn't get rid of it. There's nothing to run because I deleted all that software, so it's still got to be in the startup tray someplace.
Well, Malwarebytes, I think, now has a program you can download has what's called clean uninstall. If you do a search for Malwarebytes clean uninstall, make sure you get the one from them.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but that may be what you need to do, run their uninstall program.
Okay.
Several people told us about that last week.
They did take the anti-exploit and move it from being a standalone add-on that you paid extra for to being part of the main program.
Right.
So there's no separate install for it anymore. But when I went looking last week, I found dribs and drabs of it. Now, I'm not having a problem with my box, but hers, for whatever reason, and I'll attribute that to HP's monkeying around in something someplace.
Well, you know, most of these things, particularly people like HP, put a lot of bloatware on your machine, and some of it interacts with legitimate programs that you've installed. So I would run that Malwarebytes clean uninstall program. I would definitely, on her machine at least, try using a different browser and see if the problem goes away. Maybe then you'll know if it's Firefox.
I've got Chrome loaded and it's there. I just got to convince her that she can click that icon.
No, you could, Andy. Click the icon, go to the page, and see what happens. That's all it has to be. You don't have to change her habits. You just have to check to see if the problem is machine wide or in Firefox, and that test will tell you that.
I get that, but it's intermittent and it doesn't happen right away, and there's no predictable interval for it to happen.
Okay.
She was on today, and it didn't happen at all.
Okay. Then go the long way around.
The easiest way to do is to have her click the Chrome and just do her regular browsing and see if it happens or not.
Yep. All right.
Because I'm not going to be on that machine that long.
Right.
God forbid I should invade the kingdom. You know,
exactly. Exactly right. You keep mama happy, because if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
Nobody's going to be happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got that right.
That's the truth. All right, excellent.
Well, thank you for the suggestions, and I'm going to look into that, and we'll check the add-ons and make sure. Because I know Firefox has an anti-pop-up thing, but it comes up and tells you it's blocking a pop-up every time it does.
Right.
And she's not, that error message wasn't there. It just, the screen just goes black, but the toolbars are still there.
The DNC website isn't truly a pop-up. It's part of their website.
Right. There's also an issue where a lot of machines now block cross-site scripting, which is a web page loads content from another web page somewhere else.
Oh.
If Firefox is blocking cross-site scripting, it is possible that the DNC site is adding content from another server. Might even be one of their own servers, but it's a different server. And the cross-site scripting protection is interpreting that as an attack.
Okay. That's interesting. Okay.
So again, trying it with a different browser will at least tell you something different.
Yeah, I kind of come to that conclusion. Now I just have to convince somebody that that's a good idea.
Right.
But we'll work on that.
Good luck.
I'll sharpen up my diplomatic skills and see if I can do it without losing my head.
There you go. Good luck.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
All right. Have fun.
Oh, yeah.
If it was fun, anybody could do it.
Hey, Nick, did you hear about the guy that opened up the bar based on the Chrome web browser?
No. What about the guy who opened up the bar based on the Chrome web browser?
Well, you can keep open an unlimited number of tabs, and you can drink until you run out of memory.
Ba-dum-bum. Thank you. We'll be here all week. Try the veal. All right, back to the phones, and it looks like we have Don from Greece back again. What's up, Don?
Yeah, that's right. I wanted to know, how am I going to know if this resolves the problem? Because the symptom went away. I was able to get into my web browsers after a while without any notification message.
Well, so. when you dance the security tango, one thing it will do is each of those programs will tell you what it did. So if you look through that list and see the Zeus Trojan, you know that it's been taken care of.
Okay, so it'll call itself Zeus then.
It'll say Zeus dot... Different antivirus programs give them slightly different names. So it might be Zeus.a.trojan or Trojan.zeus or Zeus Trojan or just Zeus. So you'll see it in there somewhere.
The bottom line is... No matter what, whether you had the Zeus in there or not, you definitely need super anti-spyware and malware bytes on your machine.
And a good antivirus program.
Right. I'm just afraid of moving on and doing banking and stuff and having,
You get those two programs along with your antivirus software and have those three running.
Okay.
And definitely dance the tango first.
Mm-hmm.
Clean out your machine. Once you've done that, you can be fairly certain. Nobody can be 100% certain.
No.
But you can be in the high 90s.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
All right.
Have a good one.
Good luck, Don.
Bye.
We tell people over and over again, and somehow many of them don't seem to hear it. Frankly, Mac people are worse. They're very smug about they don't get viruses.
Oh, no, not this Mac person.
Right.
No,
you know better. No. Mac people do get viruses, and they need antivirus protection and anti-malware bytes and everything else just the way PC and Linux people do. Linux people are equally as smug, but they don't speak about it because Linux people don't talk to other people.
And certainly it's not just the virus out there. It's that sneak attack that comes in through your email that wants you to reply with banking information or the instant messenger pop-up with a link from someone that looks like it might be your friend but isn't. That's the kind of stuff that security software is there to protect you.
Right. And last week we talked a little bit about smishing.
Smishing.
SMS phishing.
Oh, okay.
Phishing, PHI. Phishing is where you get a targeted email. This is Bank of America. There's a problem with your account. Please call this number or send us your PIN or whatever it is. Now they're sending those messages over text messages, which is technically called SMS or short message service. So they're not calling it phishing. They're calling it smishing. And people are getting these messages. This is Bank of America, problem with your account. please send your account number and PIN. Reply with your account number and PIN so we know this account really belongs to you. What now? No. That's simple enough. No.
And that's when you call the source definitively.
Right. Call Bank of America. I actually got one of those, and of course I laughed because I don't bank with Bank of America. So probably if there is a problem with my account, I don't care because I don't have any money in it because I don't bank with them. But we see that a lot, and you have to be careful. Distrust everybody. Going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes. With Dave Enright, Brian Meehan, and me, Nick Francesco, and you, it's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Brian Meehan.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415, just like Brian did from Pavilion, New York. Hiya, Brian, what's up?
Gentlemen.
Nope, it's us.
Yeah. You called the wrong number.
Thanks for calling.
I actually need to apologize first. I'm sure I crashed your server with all the inquiries as to where I've been.
Yes, where have you been?
Recovering physically and financially. I also want to mention as soon as possible I will get off the schneid with you guys and get back on the favorable roster of members. Actually, I have a Chrome question for you.
Yeah.
Kind of an oddball that crept up, and I've been having trouble solving it. I do a lot of purchasing through a major industrial supply company, and I've been using Chrome lately for everything because I like the browser and it works well. Unfortunately, every time I try to log on to this particular website, and I've actually contacted their tech support, and they couldn't help me, my computer tells me that it can't log on because I already have a browser logged onto it, even though none of the other computers that I use to access this account are up and running.
It is very possible that what's happening is, and this would be poor programming on their part, but I rule out nothing. It is possible that you did log on with a different browser.
I've logged on from different computers using Chrome at different stations, different IPs even.
All right, then what may have happened is that one of those logins you didn't log out properly and it still remembers you.
And I double-checked that, and I went through there, and I turned on each machine that I would access this with, and they are logged off. You know, and none of these, I can get through it through Explorer, which I don't really like doing, but and it works fine. But it simply, Google will not release. It keeps on telling the thing I'm already logged on somewhere.
Interesting.
The machines are physically off.
How about this? From a Google browser, I assume you also have a Gmail account.
Uh huh.
In the lower right-hand corner of any Gmail window is an item that says Last Account Activity, and there's a link there that says Details. And that will show you all of the different computers that are currently signed in under your Google account.
Okay.
That and with a time and date stamp and IP address.
Okay. Do you think I'll double-check that for sure. That's something I hadn't heard yet. Also, this site also offers a mobile app. Could my phone be crossing over?
Yes. I mean, it depends on how they've programmed it, right? If it's all the same login and your phone is logged in, and they don't allow multiple logins, which is a little wacky but okay, that's their deal. It is certainly possible that they have set it up in such a way that it does that. And so if your phone is still logged in, or your tablet, or, you know, whatever, right?
Well, it seems to be very Google-centric, or very Chrome-centric, just because I can do multiple logons with Explorer, which is teasing me to death. I just hate, I want to get away from that, and I don't want to admit to the fact that I'm running 7 because I'm just a holdout on 10, but.
Well, right.
On that same screen I mentioned, there's a button there that says sign out of all other web sessions.
Okay.
And that may be enough to kick you out. But I certainly wouldn't rule out the chance that it could just be programming error on the site that you're accessing. They flicked a little flag that says that user was connected, and then at some point you logged out or left the workstation or timed out, and it just didn't reset that flag, and so it's forever in their database as you being connected from a Chrome web browser.
Okay. Well, I very much appreciate that, and great job as always, guys. And
thanks.
I just hope you guys can carry on, and I'll help out as soon as I can.
Thank you so much. Yeah, do what you got to do for you first.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we got a minute here. I'll tell you, this is my very first experience with being hurt very seriously, and you know, the people that can help you and the angels and the miracle workers,
yep,
in our medical, you know, even in Rochester and Strong, it's just stunning, absolutely stunning.
We're a very, very lucky people.
Oh, we are so lucky, and you're lucky you're in there and you're hurt, and you're certainly not trying to do a medical show, but, boy, I'll tell you what, the care and the conditions that these people are working under and still just providing exemplary service.
Yeah, I know a few nurses, and I'm telling you, they're and some doctors, and they're saints, every one of them.
You can you could not pay me enough to do that.
I'm
and
with you.
And the hours and jeepers.
No kidding.
Well, anyway, take care, guys, and we will see you down the road.
Get better.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yeah. That's a nice little tip. Google does give you that option to sign out of all your other sessions,
mm-hmm,
and that's can be very useful in this type of situation. I have had that experience on other sites. You get, you know, they say, well, you're doing this, you're doing that, and eventually you get them to look at their thing, and you get this, try it now. You know? Yeah, okay. Yeah, now it works. So it was me, huh? Yeah,
mm-hmm,
right. But yeah, if you're not going to get any help from the company, then you got to do everything you can yourself. And that was a very clever thought on your part, Brian.
Cool.
Get out.
Yep.
No, I mean, thank you. And I see you're playing around in the security checkup section.
Yeah, there's it's a great thing occasionally just to review your own security settings within Google to make sure that, you know, the computers you expect to be connected. We all, you know, many of us have multiple devices now. You've got a phone, you've got a tablet, you've got a laptop, you've got a work computer maybe. So you expect to see yourself connected from multiple devices, but maybe there's some ones in there that you don't expect.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Right. Like we've said before, you know, folks get click happy and they can, you know, throw stuff on there, and just like I've said before, I've opened up some people's browser and it's got so many tab bars on there. They go, yeah, I'm not seeing as much as I used to. And, you know, they've got like 15 of these bars going
across. Browser bars, yeah.
Yeah, browser bars. And, you know, you click them, you know, get rid of them. What are you doing? What, do you use it? No. How'd that get there? You put it there. No, I didn't. Yes, you did. You clicked on it and you said, go ahead and add it. But you didn't take the time to slow down and read it, that you were doing that.
Yep.
Because, you know, we want instant gratification.
That's right. Instant gratification is no longer fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we see that. We see a lot of that stuff. And it never hurts to check your security checkup. I regularly go to my router and check to see who the heck is logged into, is connected to my network.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, I don't have anybody
sneaking in.
Either trying to get into my network or just using my connection for nefarious purposes. Not my network is password protected and blah 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 blah. But
yeah,
I still check.
So many folks, so you can go around still to this day and find so many networks that are still wide open.
Yep,
because people don't have a clue, or they just take the default. And it's so easy to get into some of these. They're so obvious that you can see that they're the standard, you know, setup, and they haven't changed it.
They haven't changed it today.
I could sit outside your house.
Admin.
Get into your network, change it, and take over your network.
That's right, and lock you out of your own network. Randall Monroe is the author of a website called XKCD. It's a web comic, and he once said that we need a holiday to thank all those generous people who have default Netgear stuff on their mm-hmm, networks, so that you can go play with it. You know, people say, "Well, you know, when I'm somewhere I really want to have Wi-Fi, so, and there's not, you know, universal Wi-Fi in the city of Rochester or Monroe County. And I say, well, you know, there's an awful lot of people. If you don't have much scruples, you can find an awful lot of open web stuff.
Yep.
Around these
sniffing
days.
Yeah, there's plenty of programs out there to find out what's out there, and it's not password protected.
Well,
it's wide open.
They're built into your phone, for Pete's sake. They're built into your laptop. It's easy to find unprotected Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you're connected to an unprotected Wi-Fi, because you might be at, you know, a restaurant that offers free Wi-Fi, I just got back from traveling overseas, and people hand out the security key for their networks like candy, because that's just a thing. You want to make sure that if you're connecting back to the U.S. or you're connecting to something secure when you're at a shop, you're using a VPN connection. A lot of that's built into modern security software. The software I keep on my computer recognizes when I'm connected to an unsecured network and immediately offers the service. Pops right up on my screen, so
right.
I don't even have to think about it.
Right. And you want to be very careful that if you're on an open network, you are either on a VPN, which is not difficult to do, or you are at the very least on HTTPS.
Yes.
Although they're saying that's been broken now. So, but yeah, so you can't, I haven't found a good VPN for Chromebooks yet, but if you are on a regular machine, you can actually load the new version of Opera, and it comes with a VPN, a built-in VPN. And so if you use the Opera browser, it goes through a company in Canada. It's a Canadian VPN, but you do end up with a fairly protected. I haven't seen that. You end up with a fairly protected system, and that will give you more security. VPN is essentially a tunnel through the internet, so you're using the same internet everybody else is, but they can't see your stuff. And that means they don't even know it's there, frankly, and you're good, except for the other end. So the question becomes, who do you trust? Mm-hmm. Right? There are a million companies out there that have VPN systems that you can connect to. Many of them are free. Who is that person at the other end?
Yeah.
Because they're getting your data unencrypted. They have to. It has to unencrypt so that they can send it. You know, Google doesn't take encrypted data. Google takes unencrypted data. So the other end has to, at the very least, they have to unencrypt it. So you still have to know who it is at the other end that you're trusting. And that's an exercise we will leave to the reader.
With billing addresses in Kiev and Pyongyang.
It's exactly right. Now, if I'm doing something illegal. A lot of people use Tor networks, the Onion Router Tor networks, for illegal stuff, VPNs for illegal stuff, and they have less of a concern as to who knows what they're doing because they know that those people are illegals also. So I get that, but you need to be aware, you need to be more careful, and you need to know that at some point, your data are, in fact, unencrypted so they can actually get somewhere.
I'm just glad that you said data are there.
Thank you. I am. I actually learned the English language at a young age, and I know, and I studied Latin. I did time in the seminary. I was in the seminary for a couple of years, and so I learned Latin. I actually, for my sins, I learned a lot of Latin. And I know data is a plural word.
Indeed.
It's the old joke. Roman centurion walks into a bar and says, I'll have a martinis. And the bartender says, you mean a martini? And the Roman centurion says, if I wanted a double, I'd have asked for it.
Five beers, please.
I drank five beers, please. I love that joke. I don't care. I love that joke. At any rate, that's you need to protect your data, and you can't do that. Thank you very much. Thank you. You can't do that unless you are actively doing that. So if you are not at this moment doing something to protect your data, you are not, in fact, protecting your data. It's that simple. Your data are unprotected out there on the internet. And you may not care. okay? And that's up to you. That's fine. But make the conscious choice to not care rather than just not caring.
I throw a blanket over my head. I can't see you. You can't see me.
Right. I had a dog that did that. If she wanted to hide, she was a 90-pound dog. But if she wanted to hide, she'd jump up on the couch and stick her head under a blanket. Absolutely convinced she was completely invisible to everyone. She wasn't supposed to be up on the couch, but if her head was under the blanket, we couldn't see her. And that's the way you are on the internet. Just a giant dog butt hanging off the end of the couch. There's an image.
Put a picture with that, folks.
Oh.
I actually have that up on Google and Google Photos. But it's imperative these days that we protect our machines, and we cannot do it passively any longer. All right, that music tells me you have wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But oh, you hard to teach person, you're going to get the opportunity to do it again. On the other side of this slightly longer break, we will be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with the great Brian Meehan, who has generously sat in for Steve Ray, who's one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest. Me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Brian Meehan.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. If you are just joining us, yes, Steve Ray is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest. And Brian Meehan has graciously accepted the challenge of stepping in his place. And we are delighted to have him with us. Thank you for joining us.
I was just told there would be donuts.
There they are. Help yourself.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, we are delighted to talk to Chris from Gates, New York. Hi, Chris. What's up?
You talked a lot about backup last week, and I'm going to be moving from PC to a Mac. And I do have an external hard drive I've been backing up with, but I also have Carbonite. And it sounds like that external hard drive you wouldn't be able to use even if I had it, because I'm going from a PC to a Mac.
No. They will work fine. Almost every type of computer can talk to every other type of computer these days in one way or another. So that should not be an issue, particularly if you're going from PC to Mac, because Macs understand the Windows disk format.
Okay. Because I was concerned, you said if the PC had died. It hasn't, but I know it's kind of on its last leg. But I do have Carbonite, too, so I'm thinking they could pull it off of Carbonite. Probably.
Yeah, absolutely not a problem. Now, you won't be able to move your programs.
No, that's not. The only thing I'm really concerned about is my pictures. So I've been trying to get into this Apple world, and I do have an iPhone, and I've got iCloud. But what I don't understand is I didn't really sign up to have things put in the cloud yet that I know of, but I know that some things are. And I noticed Photo Stream. I'm not sure what Photo Stream is and why I even have that, as opposed to just pictures and pictures like I do on my iPad. My iPad pictures are just, in albums or whatever.
Right.
But what's the difference with Photo Stream?
Photo Stream is something that's built into an iCloud account, and iCloud is part of an Apple ID. It's what you sign in to authorized purchases from the Mac App Store or from the Apple iPhone App Store. It's a way of identifying who you are to Apple's ecosystem of products. PhotoStream is one of the ways that it shows you the last, I believe it's 100 photos that you are sharing within your group. Now, you may not be sharing any photos with anybody, so they're just there in kind of a limbo, but available to share with friends, family, neighbors,
girls. Now, I noticed it says something, if they're in PhotoStream, I could move them over to my iPad. Now, I know I have an iPod, an account, Apple account, with my iPad. It's just that I don't have it set up for iCloud yet. Is that correct?
That's entirely possible. One of the things that may make your transition from a PC to a Mac significantly easier, particularly when it comes to photos, is using a cross-platform photo service like Google Photos. That is happy on a Windows machine. It's happy on a Mac. It's happy on Android. It's happy on iOS. It's happy on just about any platform you put it on. It's easy to share with and has unlimited free storage.
I have an old iTouch that has quite a bit of music on it, and I don't have any music on any of my iPhones or iPads, per se, because I haven't hooked it up to the computer. But is there an app or some way that you can get, like, the iCloud, you get your iTunes to your other devices, or would that have to be through the Mac?
The way to pull them, to have them come off of a device like that is to sync it on your Mac with or whatever computer it came from first, whatever library it's married to.
Right.
Are these songs that you've purchased through the App Store or songs that you have gotten from your own CD or audio collections?
Yeah, they're from CDs, okay. Pretty much. And they're in the iTunes. And like I say, the only device I ever put them on was the iTouch. Now, as you know, you don't have to put your iPad or your iPhone to anything, and you correct. Get whatever you need. So that's why I've never put the songs onto my phone. But you're saying I would need to hook up to the PC or the Mac when I do get that to get them over there.
Yeah, you can either do that, or on the Mac there's an application called Sinuti, which is iTunes spelled backwards. And that will help you get songs that did not come from the Mac App Store, songs that came from your own personal collection. That'll help you retrieve them from a formerly damaged iTunes library or a library that you can no longer connect to. Maybe you reloaded your computer at some time or you no longer have access to that computer. That way you don't lose those, you know, that one Rafi CD that you backed up ages ago.
Right. And no, because I have playlists that I wouldn't mind having a couple playlists on my iPhone. But the real way to do that now is, even though I just have the PC, I need to hook my iPhone up to the PC, which I've never done before. I haven't hooked it up to anything.
Are you curating them entirely on your iPhone?
Say that again?
So are you making these playlists entirely on your iPhone?
I don't have any music. They're already made on the PC.
Okay. Then in that case, you can actually just forklift your, using your external backup hard drive, you can take that iTunes library right from your PC and bring it right over to your Mac.
Right.
And then,
right. But
and
I can't get it to my iPhone. I don't have the Mac yet.
Well, so when you do get a Mac, you can then hook the, you connect the Mac to your phone either wirelessly or through a cable.
Correct.
And when you, and then you can sync them. And
yes.
Whatever is in your iTunes account on your Mac will now sync to your phone.
And going,
yes, that's
and,
why I want to get the Mac, because I think it'll be so much easier to do stuff.
Well, if you're already halfway into the Mac ecosystem, being there all the way is not a bad idea.
Jump both feet.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Excellent. Thank you very much. That I'm just showing him a picture of my dog hiding on the couch under the blanket.
Thinking it's hiding.
Yeah, thinking it's hiding. I can see 80% of that dog, including her nose and most of her behind. And her tail is dragging on the floor, but she's hidden. Mm-hmm. She is absolutely thoroughly convinced.
You can't see her.
She is not visible in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm. She's enjoying a wonderful false sense of security.
Exactly. Just like you when you don't have enough, and I bad stuff on your machine.
Well, just the general protection, like we said, the basic three programs, you know, this good antivirus program, super anti-spyware, and malware bytes. And folks say, well, why do you got to have two of those? Because no one program, as far as spyware and malware, handle it all.
Right.
And the way both attack it differently, it uncovers a lot of stuff.
Right.
And super anti-spyware runs in the background. It's always on there, and you'll get notices once in a while, usually in the lower right-hand corner, that it's updating. And you just say, okay, let it.
Yeah, and we need to be clear about something. Even things like super anti-spyware and malware bytes and a good antivirus and or running a Chromebook is not going to save you from some of the ads you see in your web browser,
right,
where you can actually get a thing in your web browser that says, there's a problem with your computer, click here, or there's a problem with your computer, call this number, or there's a problem with your bank account, call this number. Those are purely ads that pop up on your computer that you just you happen to land on a web page that, happened to have one, so they're completely random. But they are social engineering, which means they're not trying to, in any way dig into your machine. That would be technical capabilities.
Trying to dig into you.
They're digging into you by using social networking, not social networking, by saying, you've got a problem, give us a call, and we will fix it. So you can still get fooled or attacked or hit by these things. If you're not careful.
Guaranteed, though, two places that will never call you, telling you that you owe money or your machine's infected or you, this or that, that's Microsoft.
And Apple.
And the IRS.
Right.
The IRS will never call you. Tell you. They always do things by mail, folks.
Right.
They do not give you a personal call and say, all right, you owe us this much money, and you got to go to your bank, and you got to get this and this and that and send it to us. No.
Also, let's stop and think for 1 second. Why would the IRS need you to go get a money order?
Yeah.
They're the IRS. If they want your money, they'll just take it out of your bank.
Yeah, and they'll garnish your wages.
Right. They don't need you to send them a money order. That's not how the government works.
But those two biggies are the ones that we hear the most going on right now.
Yep.
Well, Microsoft gave us a call. No, they do not call you.
No, they did not call you.
Yeah, it's hard to even find a live person to talk to in the IRS. So just ignore both of those.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. Hiya, Walter. What's up?
Hello there, gentlemen. You may know of me because I've installed a Sophos antivirus for Linux.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was blissfully going along. Everything seemed to be running fine until I decided I'm going to try the command line to do my own manual update. Everything seemed to run fine, but then it said, at the very end, it said, you have mail at /var/mail/root. So going into using Thunar under, you know, doing sudo Thunar, going in, I take a look, and yes, there is mail. Never knew it existed there.
Yep.
And it said to me that there was an error. Subject in brackets, SAV Linux slash scan error 0x3C : unable to write the TELPA socket detected on the desktop. And then it further said this error, 0xC3, unable to write the TELPA socket, was detected in the file /var/log/clam/av/freshclam.log when closing it on such and such a date. Access to the file was not allowed. So I'm wondering, is there a conflict? But I also have to is there a conflict between Sophos and Clam AV? Or I also have noticed recently that when I run Clam AV, it says an update is available. It's a yellow bar at the bottom, says
yep,
update is available, but I can't. I click on the icon to update, and nothing happens.
All right. Okay, so there's a lot. We're unpacking a lot here. First, what kind of socket was it? Say it slowly, please.
It said TELPA, T C-A-L-P-A.
Okay. Okay. Here's the deal. When a file is already open in anything, it cannot be reopened by somebody else.
Okay.
So often enough, right, often enough you will find that's an issue when two programs are trying to write to the same thing. And that's an SE Linux, a secure Linux thing, which is what you're running underneath.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
So what's really just happened is the two programs are trying to access exactly the same file. And that file appears to be the log for FreshClam. Now, FreshClam is a program that goes out every X hours, days, whatever,
right,
and tries to download a fresh version of Clam AV, or in particular, the virus definitions.
Yes.
Okay. So that's 99% expect that's a timing error. And that's all that is.
Okay.
So I wouldn't get excited about that one. However, there were about 40 other things in here. Hold on. Okay. So that's what's happened. And in fact, since the problem was the log, all it really did was it probably was trying to read the log in order to see if it had a virus in it.
Yep.
At the same time, FreshClam was writing the log, and that's where the error comes from. So I wouldn't get excited about that one. In terms of multiple antivirus programs running simultaneously, yes. That's always a problem. We always say on the Windows side, you only need one. Because when you run multiples, often two things happen. First, they're both trying to access the same file, and you get this issue. The file then has nobody reading it. And secondly, they each think the other one is a virus.
Okay. So...
No, Walter, hold on the line. We got to take a break.
Thank you.
Stay on the line. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Brian Meehan, Walter from Greece, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 19 minutes after the hour, Soundbites member supported Jazz and 8.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Brian Meehan.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Walter from Greece still on the line. What's next, Walter?
My question was I like the way that Sophos is constantly monitoring, whereas versus Clam AV, I have to go through it and at the end of the day run it to see how it... if it has detected anything, there's anything made its way onto my user. So therefore, do you think it's worthwhile then, or smart, as you said, talking about conflicts, would it be smart to disengage or uninstall Clam AV?
Well, you can have on access. Well, okay, let me answer this question in three ways. First, in English, you certainly don't need more than one running constantly.
Okay.
So check to see if, in fact, Clam AV is running on-access scanning, which is constant scanning, and that's in its configuration file.
Okay.
Just say no to on-access scanning. But you don't need two. So if you are, in fact, running Clam AV in the background all the time, or that you find that Fresh Clam is regularly conflicting with Sophos. You only need one, and Sophos is excellent. So turn off or uninstall, actually, is better. Both Clam AV and Fresh Clam.
Okay.
And you, like I said, you only really need one. It's never a bad idea to have more than one. You can only run one constantly. The others you would just use as a check once in a while. So if you're going to keep Clam AV, make sure it's not doing on-access scanning.
Okay.
And then you can leave it in the system and, like, on a Sunday afternoon, set it up to run when you know that Sophos is not doing anything in particular, like scanning your whole machine or updating itself or any of that sort of thing.
Got it. All right.
And
excellent.
You may need to go into Sophos and tell it Clam AV is okay.
Okay. I can do that, too.
Yep.
All right. Excellent. I do admire your skill at looking up that information, because I was all over the web trying to find it, even putting in the error codes and whatever else. And it was very tough. I didn't come anywhere close to what you found. Thank you.
Oh, that's all right. Thank you, Walter. Well, part of it is of course, we've had 40 years of experience doing this stuff, so we've seen it before. But the other thing is our kung fu, our Google fu is strong. Exactly. Our Google fu is strong. So we admit that. We admit that, you know, we don't know everything, but Mm-mm. Google does, and we know how to find it there. So that all works out for us. Learning to use Google, I admit that, you know, when I'm on the web at 3 o'clock in the morning and somebody asks me a question, I don't do tech support over the web much anymore. I certainly don't do it in Facebook anymore. Because it's horrible. And the interface is for conversations is terrible on Facebook. I don't care what anybody says. So I don't do it there, but people are always asking questions. And my first thought is always, How did you not look that up on Google? I mean, the simple fact is I literally took what you asked me and typed it into Google.
And it was the first link.
And it was the first link. So I've started using Let Me Google That For You.
Yes.
But people get insulted. Let Me Google That For You. What happens is you send them the link, and they open it up, and it looks like a Google page, only the cursor moves by itself and clicks in the box, mm-hmm. and then it automatically types in the search terms, shows you the result, and then brings up a thing that says, how hard was that?
It's a little smug and maybe a little passive-aggressive, yeah. But, you know.
It is a little, but it's more than a little passive-aggressive. Yeah, but it strikes me as so easy to learn to use Google, particularly since I don't do any magic. If you say to me, you know, I found this error, blah, 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 cannot connect to Talpa's socket. I literally typed that in to yeah. Google, and it gave me the answer. But interpreting that answer, I understand, is where our 40 years of experience.
But I also love just my Google phone just to be able, you know, it could be over on say on the coffee table, and I could just yell to it, you know, hey, Google, you know, and then it'll sit there and look up whatever I want and then read it back to me. Oh, okay, thank you.
My desktop did that the other day. I used my Google Home, but my desktop has done the same thing. I was talking to somebody on the phone, and the cat jumped up in my arms, this 20-pound cat who thinks he's still a kitten. So I was sitting and holding him and talking on the phone, and I was telling him about the 3D printer that I've backed on Kickstarter, and they said, how big is the print area? And I said, it's 120 millimeters cubed. They said, what's that in real measurements? And I suddenly realized I don't know. So I just said, hey, Google, which is the home trigger. Mm-hmm. Hey, Google, convert 120 millimeters to inches. Came back to 4.7. So it's magic
mm-hmm.
That these things work the way they do. It's just, it's magic.
When people point out and say to me, oh, well, you're really good with the computers, I certainly make it a point to say, perhaps, but what I'm really good at is taking your information and working with people
mm-hmm.
and then turning that into a way to extract that information from all the various resources that we have available.
Right.
Yeah.
Most of IT is
just doing the work, you know, and so many folks find that so frustrating. They don't have the patience for it.
Right.
Whereas our sick minds think of it as, oh, this is going to be a cool challenge. And have fun looking it up and doing the research and finding the answers and solving the problems.
Right. I tell people all the time, you know, they say, oh, where did you get all this knowledge? Blah, blah. And I say, here's the only difference between you and me. I read the manual.
And the beard.
And the beard. Yeah, there's the beard. But mainly, I read the manual.
RTFM.
RTFM. Read the manual first. And people don't, they want to jump. I get that. I get wanting to jump in. I truly do.
And manuals can certainly be daunting, and they're written poorly most of the time.
Yes. Right. But understanding that, and if necessary, supplementing that with a few searches on Google, saves you an intense amount of grief.
Oh,
And I admit there's, 40 years of experience behind it as well, but it saves you an intense amount of grief. The first thing I did when I bought my car, drove it home, took the manual out of the glove box, and read it cover to cover. Most of it I've never used.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the point.
Right.
The point is when somebody said, well, what about this? I said, oh, yeah, I read that. That's here and do this. And you read them. Now, it used to, back in the day, I used to work at a bank. Several people will recognize this story. And we all rotated on the help desk.
Okay.
And people hated when I was on the help desk. They hated it because they would call. And, of course, we're a bank, so we have a lot of regulatory things. We were a federal bank, a lot of regulations. Everybody must own all the software they ran, and they must have the manuals at their workstation. Back in the day when Microsoft gave out manuals.
Mm-hmm.
So when people would call me up, mostly Excel questions, and say, how do you do this? I would say, well, let's take out our manual and turn to page 47.
We'll break the cellophane
out of
together.
Like an 800. Right. Let's take out our manual, take the cellophane off it. How do you know the cellophane on it? Trust me.
Most folks don't.
Right. And turn to page 47, which will tell you how to do this. 47. And the first 30 pages are tables of contents. Well, I've been very busy. No. Part of your job description is you're supposed to read the manual. That's part of the regulations, and people just don't do it. I know that most things don't come with manuals nowadays, but a lot of them come with tutorials. Cheese and crackers, if you don't like to read, YouTube has tutorials on everything.
Yeah.
Teach you how to pronounce words.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you can find all this stuff, and all it takes is a little bit of time and effort. But I get it. It's just as easy to ask us as it is to search Google. No, I get that. I do. Our hope, of course, is that not only are we more friendly than Google, but we also will couch the response in some language that you will understand more readily than what you might find on Google.
Now get off our lawn.
And get off our damn lawn. That's exactly right. We're all delighted that you call every week, but it frustrates us that some people wait weeks to ask a question that they could at least make a start on Google. And I realize that if everybody did that, we wouldn't have a TV show, a radio show anymore.
Yeah.
And I get that, but learn to help yourself, and you'll be a lot farther ahead less frustrated.
We'll be here to push you in the right direction.
That's what we're for. That's exactly it. All right, let me read a quick news item here. Microsoft is overhauling its big sales and marketing organization in a move that will cut 3,000 to 4,000 jobs, mostly outside the United States. Microsoft spokesrobot confirmed that roles will be eliminated and that most of them will be abroad, but he declined to be specific. The precise number is uncertain, partly because in some countries, especially in Europe, labor laws require negotiation. Microsoft workers were notified on Thursday if their current job was affected. Some of the workers will get other jobs within the software company. This is being done mainly to evolve the skill sets we need, said Frank Shaw, Microsoft spokesrobot. Last week, Microsoft described a sweeping realignment of its sales and marketing arm, which employs about 50,000 people worldwide. At the time, there were reports that thousands of jobs might be eliminated. CNBC reported on Thursday that up to 3,000 jobs would be cut as a result of the organization. In an internal email last week, Judson Althoff, a Microsoft executive vice president, described the reorganization and its rationale. He wrote that there was an enormous $4.5 trillion market opportunity for Microsoft in the coming years. The sales and marketing changes, Mr. Althoff wrote, were intended to enable us to align the... were intended to enable us to align the right resources for the right customers at the right time. Microsoft global headcount is 121,500, a number that has increased in the past few years. The one major workforce cutback at Microsoft came in 2014 when 18,000 jobs were eliminated. That followed shortly after Satya Nadella succeeded Steve Ballmer as chief executive. Mr. Nadella, there are some who will say he didn't succeed, but he did follow along. Mr. Nadella quickly determined that Microsoft's $7.2 billion acquisition of Nokia's mobile phone business in 2014 was a failure and started selling off pieces and closing it down. Most of the job cuts at that time were related to Nokia, or Nokia. I don't care how you pronounce it. A year later, Microsoft took a $7.6 billion write-off. Microsoft is competing with Amazon, Google, and other major technology companies like IBM and Oracle in the fast-growing business of delivering software as a cloud service instead of its traditional software loaded into computers. Under Mr. Nadella, Microsoft has made that transition to cloud software delivery, and its personal computer software business is no longer considered an engine of growth. New capabilities are being built into the cloud services, notably big data analysis and artificial intelligence, and businesses require specialized cloud software tailored for their industry. The Microsoft email last week said that reorganization was intended to sharpen its focus on six priority industries: manufacturing, financial services, retail, health, education, and government. It's just pretty much everything. Sales and marketing jobs in the future will often require technical and industry-specific knowledge, more technical and industry-specific knowledge than before. The reorganization and job cuts were an effort to match the company's skills in the changing marketplace. So do you think this is a good move or troubles ahead for Microsoft? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. All of this is in response, I think, honestly, to Google.
You figure... What, 15 years ago, and you talk about who the major players were in the market when you're talking about technology. You know, you're talking about, was I looking at an IBM-based system, or maybe 20 years ago, running Windows, or was I looking at an Apple Macintosh computer? And the players now, the ecosystems are so different. Now it's Google, it's Facebook.
Tablets, laptops. Tablets and laptops are more prevalent out there nowadays. If you go to a lot of your chain stores, say like Best Buy or anything else, you see more laptops and tablets than you do towers.
Are we in a post-PC world?
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
And this has a lot to do with, I'm pointing at my Chromebook. Google has billions of Chromebooks in education these days. And Apple was right. You know, Apple believed firmly in the Jesuit principle of give me your child before he's five and he's mine for life. You put Chromebooks in schools and people want them in the workplace afterward. We'll come back to this topic in just a minute with Dave Enright, Brian Meehan, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Brian Meehan.
At 44 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. Boy, I thought this was water, but it must be gin. Anyway, we're back, and what the heck were we talking about?
We were talking about tablets and laptops and that becoming more prevalent than the desktops and that, because just the way we do business nowadays.
Right.
You know, so much is done on your phone. And the folks have the bigger, thinner phones so they can search the web, get their emails, or they're carrying around a tablet.
Right.
Or a notebook or a Chromebook.
And right now everybody's reacting to Google. Google doesn't need to make money by selling apps.
No, they sell ads.
They sell ads. So whereas Microsoft made its money selling an operating system and selling an Office suite and selling other programs, Google gives away an operating system, Chrome OS, gives away an Office suite, the Google suite, the G suite.
Yeah.
And it gives that stuff away. and it gives away email. I mean, if you can look, Google Photos, when I put my photos on Google Photos, as long as they are less than 16 megapixels in size,
they're up
it's
there
free.
And they're free.
Free. It does not take up space.
See, and Microsoft doesn't like that.
Nobody likes that. Apple doesn't like it either.
They want an angle that they can make some money.
That's right. And Google doesn't want your money. Google wants your data.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want your data. They don't care about you. They want the aggregate data.
Because right. every project that Google works on is the stepping stone to whatever the next project is. So
right.
Google Photos is crowdsourcing millions and millions and millions of data points so that when they go to augmented reality or self-driving cars, they have tons of data to work with.
Look at how their voice recognition works. You can go into Google Docs and start a document and pull down from the menu, you know,
That's
do this
great.
With my voice, and you can talk to your computer or your tablet or your phone, and it will transcribe your words. Well, how does it work? Well, what they did was they had Google Voice, and Google Voice was a free service which would transcribe your voicemail for you, part of what it did. Transcribe your voicemail. And they instituted a feature where you could help them make the product better by fixing their errors. So they crowdsourced voice recognition. Brilliant.
Did you ever read the article on reCAPTCHA and CAPTCHA, those annoying little things that at the bottom of a sign-up page where you have to identify a picture? So you'll see some of them have numbers in them, and they're sort of blurry, and often they're like street signs or house numbers. That information is sourced from the Google car that drives around, and
nice.
Once they get enough people identifying the correct numbers in there, they're able to say with a certain amount of confidence that that number is accurate.
Of course. Oh, how brilliant. So I know that's 729 Oak Street.
Exactly.
Unbelievably brilliant. So they're getting us, under the guise of helping ourselves, to help Google and make their voice recognition in this case, or their number recognition in this case, better. And so they now have billions upon billions of data points on different voices and different accents and everything else. And so now when I sit in front of my Chromebook or whatever and open up a Google Doc and say voice, I can speak this fast and it'll get everything I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for sure.
And it's, you know, the only problem is if you've got a lousy microphone.
Yeah.
You know, and that's technical. There's not, you know, that's hardware. There's nothing Google's going to be able to do about that. But because Google is giving away all of this stuff, just giving it away, it's disrupted Microsoft horribly. It's disrupted Apple horribly. Google Music, there's no limit to the number of songs I can have on Google Music. Mm-hmm. Photos, no limit to the number of photos I can have there as long as they're less than 16 megapixels in size. Google Docs. And Sheets and
presentation,
their PowerPoint thing. As long as I keep it in their format, which I can automatically do if I upload or download stuff.
Yep.
As long as I keep it in their format, it doesn't count against my storage. And so they've got, for in my case, they've got 15,000 documents, and I'm only using 2 gigs of my storage, and that's because I've got a couple of very, very large PDFs that I need. Available to me.
Yeah, we're over 1 million documents at the school now.
Yeah.
Between all the students.
And it's using no space.
Nope.
Yep.
Plus, they give us unlimited for an EDU account anyway.
Right. Because you're an EDU account. But even so, you don't need unlimited because nobody's using all that stuff. All right, back to the phones. And once again, it's Andy from Greece. What's up, Andy?
Oh, you got into one of my favorite topics, Microsoft.
Yeah.
I think the momentum is still out there because there's just so many machines out there with Windows on it. But I think when, you know, now that they've kicked a lot of them over to Windows 10 and they're eventually going to start charging a subscription for Windows 10.
Right.
I think right now they're in kind of that quiet before the storm. And when people got to find out they're going to have to pay X number of dollars every year for their Windows box, they're going to start saying, well, maybe it's time I look at that Google box, which I buy once, and then I don't have to do any of this nonsense.
That's exactly right. And Microsoft is trying to figure out a way to stay profitable in an era when 80% of what they do, somebody else gives away.
Well, I think they're trying to figure out how to stay relevant. And unfortunately, the whole, I look at PCs and things like that. When I bought my wife's laptop and I built my computer when I had to get out of XP,
right.
If Google had been a little bit farther along in its gestation, I probably would have gone Google right to Chromebooks and not bothered.
There are still places where Microsoft is very relevant in the enterprise, especially when it comes to cloud computing. But still, they're behind the curve because Google and Amazon have been doing that for years.
Big businesses aren't going to just wholesale run out. They've got too much invested. They've got too much infrastructure and everything else. But for the home computer user, you look at it and you go, well, gee, I got to pay all this money, then I got to buy the thing, then I got to now I'm going to start paying subscription services every year, or I can go buy a Chromebook, and I'm not really doing anything that taxes the Chromebook's capabilities.
Right. If you mostly live in your browser, the chances are likely that you can live on a Chromebook without even noticing a problem. One of the other issues Microsoft has is in many institutions, they were selling tens of thousands of dollars worth of software and hardware to run email. You buy an Exchange server, maybe two or three of them, and backups and all this other stuff. Many, many, many educational institutions are now taking advantage of Google's offer to use Gmail. Google will manage all of their accounts. They get unlimited accounts. They get somebody else deals with the pain and headache of managing it, and it's all just sitting there, just free. Go ahead.
If I were a sysadmin, I'm a great engineer, but Google's got thousands of me.
Right, right. And if I'm overworked anyway, and I already don't have enough people to do the job, and I can offload email, which is a massive pain in the neck, I will do that in a hot New York minute.
Can't wait till they take printing.
Well, think about this, though. You look at the kids today. I mean, I look at my children, and I got one son that's 29, another one that's 36, and their spouses, and even my friends, and we're all in our 60s. Email just about doesn't get sent anymore. Everything's now either text messages or you get a message through Facebook messaging.
Right. Right, kids are using WhatsApp, and all that other stuff. But you're right, and so when I can write a document and share it with my faculty member, right, my teacher, nobody has to print anything, nobody has to mail anything, nobody has to do anything different. I just write it and put it in the folder that's shared with everybody, and everybody gets it. We're done. How convenient is that? And I can do all that on a Chromebook, which costs me $150 as opposed to a $700 or $800 laptop that I have to update and worry about and blah, 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 blah. I win. There's no question. Listen, Andy, we're about gone, so I gotta hang up.
I understand. I just couldn't resist. You opened up a topic I wanted to
talk on. I know.
All
right, thanks, Andy.
And we'll be listening next week.
Yep, thanks. Bye-bye. Sorry, excuse me. And Google is disrupting Apple. They're disrupting Microsoft. And these people are kind of scrambling. They don't know quite what to do at this point.
My kids, up until age 10 or 11, they didn't touch a Microsoft operating system. They've been on iOS and Google and Linux.
Yep. And they haven't had the need to go to Microsoft. They don't even care about Microsoft.
Right.
All right, that's it. That music tells us you've wasted another week of your life with this nonsense, and we're done. First, let me thank Brian Meehan. He was wonderful to come down here and step in for Steve. We may see Steve again someday if he eludes the law somewhere in the Badlands of the Southwest. I want to thank Dave Enright for actually being aware that he was here today. Very nicely done. We're very proud of you. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everyone who called in. I want to apologize to those to whom we did not get. You got to call in earlier next week. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. We'll be back next week with a lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites and the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.